What can happen when one comprehensive energy services company behind an entire local economy and one large local university that wants to provide 100% clean energy to its campus come together as partners, fully committed to reducing climate-changing emissions and improving research on climate change to achieve greater improvements and results? And that's a question. That's a big, bold question. The answer? Significant, positive, impactful, climate action-driven things can happen, and indeed they are in motion. They say that the devil is in the details, so stay with me to find out what it's going to take for Tucson Electric Power Company to execute, and while I was writing this, I'm like, whoa, this is a big deal, a massive clean energy project for the University of Arizona. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Down to Earth Tucson. And if you haven't already picked it up, I'm pretty darn excited to have with me in studio Ted Burhans. He's like the guy, the go-to guy, the director of emerging technology and innovations, and it's a really big job. So I said to him before we got on air, I said, Ted, I have so many questions for you, so relax, get comfortable in your seat. There's a lot I want to know, and there's a lot the community wants to know about taking a university campus, and I have to say this like hyperbole, to 100% clean energy. Real partnerships at work, Ted. I'm really glad you're here. Can you tell?
I can tell.
Are you ready for me?
Yep.
And I told you, it's been a blockbuster day anyway. So it's like, okay, Ted, at the end of the day, I'm happy. So to begin with, and I think this is really important because of some of the questions I'm going to ask you, you have over a decade experience with TEP, 13 years, 14 years?
About there,
something
yes.
like
yep.
that. As I said, you have quite a few things on your plate, to say the least. You've probably maybe given up some board slots or something. You have oversight of the renewable energy department, some of my buddies, both residential and non-residential distributed generation programs. You have utility scale planning in your wheelhouse. I'm writing this last night and I'm cracking up. I'm like, this dude is busy. The residential efficiency and demand side management department. And if that wasn't enough, the company's innovation team, which is where a lot of the action is. So let's face it, there's major expansion going on all over the place. So top that with the TEP-UA partnership, and what do I get? A headache.
That's there
what
you
I'm
go.
Telling you. It was like my head was bursting last night. And the first thing I want to do is really a deep dive, like Inside Edition on Down to Earth, is I want to know how it all got started. It had to be somebody's idea because it is a big, bold, bodacious idea. And can you give credit to someone? Who thought this? Who thought of this?
I would give most of the credit to, a split between President Robbins at the U of A and then also our president and CEO, Dave Hutchins at TEP. This was all born because of President Robbins' strategic decisions, or at least thoughts, in late 2018, and we got together with a bunch of the C-suites from both sides and really tried to hammer out and start to say, what can we do? How can we actually make this a reality and do it in a quick way? Luckily for us at TEP, we've got a couple big projects coming online at the end of 2020. And so we were able to parlay those into what we have today, which is going to be providing the U of A with 100% clean energy by the end of this year.
And I'm thinking the clock's ticking. And it's like, to me, in my ear, tick, 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 tick. It's not like tick, 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 because we're already almost finished with January, mm-hmm. which is blowing my mind as someone in the workforce saying,
absolutely.
What the heck happened in January? Did I really write the 22nd down? And I want to go into, I mean, look at your scope of work or what you oversee from the you know, 50, 60, 70, now 100,000 feet level. Tell me some of what it's going to take, because those changes, I would assume that things have to change at the physical plant of the U of A, maybe. I want to know that. And then there's the building or the whole deployment of a workforce to build wind farms and solar. And I've had people on the TEP team really elaborate and articulate what those are. I mean, those are big things. So tell us some of the things that it is going to take or what's operational already.
Sure. So one of the biggest drivers or kind of influencers on us even being able to offer this type of partnership was our stated goal, our TEP stated goal of being 30% renewables by 2030. And we came out with that goal a few years ago. And really what that did is it helped us come up with our own internal strategy of how could we even accept 30%.
How are we going to get there?
Right. Yeah. How do we do that? And a lot of it was bolstering our system. As I like to say, renewables, especially solar, only works when it's sunny, and wind only works when it's windy. So there's a lot of intermittency that happens. So from us as a company, we're in the process of building out, just finishing up our reciprocating engines, which are our fast-acting generators to help with intermittency. So we knew that renewables was going to keep causing or potentially cause issues to the grid, but we also knew that we wanted to keep deploying renewables. So that was a big kind of infrastructure piece. On the actual project side of things, so we have a 100 megawatt solar farm that's being built on South Wilmot, being coupled with a 30 megawatt battery system. And when we talk about in those
terms,
that's huge. It is huge. It's over a square mile of land, and the battery system will be there to actually soak up midday sun and move it to 4 hours later in the day. So really helping with the peak, which solar doesn't always help with because, face it, the
storage.
Exactly. The sun's not always shining at 5, 6, and 7 o'clock. So that was, you know, getting set up for that from a solar perspective was key. And then we got a really great opportunity to enter into our wind farm contract. So in southeastern New Mexico, just outside of Roswell, we'll be building out almost 250 megawatt facility with our partner EDF. And that, to give some perspective there, we're talking over 60 wind turbines that stand well over 500 feet tall when their blades are swept up. And the project is about 24 miles long. So huge
I like
project.
Literally have to go there. I go to Taos all the time, and I was telling Francisco this, that we were coming back from Taos, and all of a sudden on, I think it was I-25, I'm not sure, I see the one wind turbine, two wind, mm-hmm. the individual blades, and they are big. They are like massively big. And he said, oh, it's probably for our wind farm in Roswell. It probably was.
It very well could be. They're pouring footings right now. And those footings, are about anywhere, they're about 40 feet across and about 15 feet deep. So they're some of the largest wind turbines that will ever or have ever been deployed on land. Typically, they're used for offshore. So massive
they're
devices.
Big. Like, they're really big. And I just have to dispel a myth. I'm asking you to dispel the myth. I can't. Those, we see the wind farms when we travel, mm-hmm. right? And they don't have to be going like, woo, 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 woo.
No, they don't.
Right? Please tell me, if they move a little bit, they're so big. Doesn't that help a lot?
It does. And there is a little bit of physics that goes on there. Obviously, the gearing inside of them, they can produce power at a lower rate. But then one of the cool facts that I like to say is that at the tip of those blades, even if they look like they're moving pretty slow, they can be moving 150 to 200 miles an hour at those tips. But another kind of thing to keep in mind with wind farms is that they can't work when it's really super windy, because they will just spin too fast. And so there's a fine kind of happy place for those wind farms to be deployed.
Yeah, I can't imagine if they really got literally whipped up and going. It's just amazing to see the sheer magnitude of them when they move, and thinking that I understand why that's, you know, creating energy.
Sure, it's, absolutely.
It's unbelievable. So, and the vast, you know, there's the vast array on the way. So now there'll be vast solar arrays.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yes.
Nothing makes me smile more. So that's, you know, it's going to be unbelievable. So I want to ask you, and this is really your opinion, and we know Joe will be listening, but I never stump the guest ever, no matter what. From where I sit, having dedicated the last 10 years of my life and our team's life to really covering topics like this, talking to some of the top people in the country and in the world, being a very strong partner with TEP and having honest conversations when I don't agree. It seems to me that there has been some type of almost like palpable shift, very good one, where there's, and it's not just with TEP and the U of A. I understand that. With Bobby Robbins and Hutch, it's a perfect storm because of their dedication to what we need to get to as a planet. Mm-hmm. But I feel like even with my clients, they're asking for more. They're asking for different things. It's there seems to me, and just like the past year, an acceleration of the conversations around reducing CO2 emissions. You've been doing it 13 years. What's your response to that? Has there been a more intense look at how can we make things happen faster?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that we can easily point to, you know, the wildfires in California, the wildfires in Australia, and just climate change is here. It's real. We as a company, we want to get away from just saying, hey, we're deploying things for the sake of doing it. There's a true concerted effort to reduce carbon emissions by our company. This U of A partnership is not the only one that we have going on that started up about this time last year. We also are looking at a comprehensive carbon reduction approach with them. So real more science-based approach, making sure that we're doing what we can. Obviously, one of the big things that gets the biggest splash out there is just the cost of renewables. That has dropped precipitously.
Like, oh my gosh.
Absolutely. It's been the past decade. It's been, you know, up to 90% decreases in cost. Battery storage still has a ways to go.
It does.
But we know that all of those things put together and we'll have a really robust portfolio. And quite frankly, not only just from the cost perspective, but it's what our customers want. And we walk a delicate line of providing what the customers want while also making things affordable. And so we have to...
You have many masters.
Absolutely.
Really and truly.
But no, you're right. There has been a big kind of shift to say, hey, this is here to stay and we need to do what we can and to embrace it and make sure that it works and keeps the grid running.
You know, I was in San Antonio this past weekend with a lot of thought leaders, a lot of global influencers. And, you know, we talked about it. Some of the conversations got really deep, especially like at 1 o'clock in the morning after, you know, a couple of glasses of champagne or something, about the global platform and almost saying, I'm so sorry that Australia stepped up and they're taking the bullet for everybody, because that is getting everybody's attention, because there were scientists at this, you know, it's the Evolutionary Business Council that said they don't know if Australia's going to make it, like literally, sure, if things don't change. And you sit there and you say, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely,
people can't ignore that. And, you know, some of the books I'm reading that have been out since November talked about what might happen in Australia, right? And here it is January, and I'm like, yeah, what might happen? Accelerated so much.
Absolutely.
So there's another part to this change of what I would call the culture of the U of A and the culture of TEP and the acceleration of these conversations. Does it matter to other universities and utilities around the country? And I know TEP is kind of unique because they supply. And they don't just buy their power, and they're not just a conduit, sure, for delivery. So they're the whole, I call it the whole green enchilada. It's very professional. And but are other universities watching? I know when I had somebody from Oberlin, the professor at Oberlin, and that whole city is dedicated to a sustainable and socially just community, and it took years. So are other people watching you? Is your phone ringing, as I would hope? People take notice. Universities know what's happened. We have the UC3 agreement that President Robbins has participated in. So what are you seeing on the national scale?
I would say definitely universities notice. I think right now a lot of them are just working to digest exactly how it works through their regulatory environment, whatever that
right.
might be.
They're all different.
They're all different. But one of the big pieces that was consistently talked about as the partnership was created for this is it helps attract professors. It helps attract faculty. It helps attract students. More and more students these days are looking for that environmentally conscious university and not just the best party school, something like that. So this really can and should be used as a selling point for the university. It is the largest research university in the U.S.
That's doing it. It's a big deal.
And, you know, it'll be 100% in total emission reduction. About 70% of their actual power will come in real time from the solar and wind. So something that we've never seen pretty much for any project so far.
You know, I haven't asked anybody this. And like, I do this, we're not on TV, but it's like this just in. Won't they like really get to experience a massive cost savings because of the way that they're buying their, it's like, it's going to be cheaper because they have wind and solar or not? Is that
I wouldn't quite go to say that it's going to be massive savings. It did help lock in costs for the 20-year life of the contract. And the way that we structured it is really to make sure that there wasn't a cost shift or a cost impact to other customers. That to us is a huge deal.
Oh my gosh,
huge deal.
I'm so glad you brought that up. We're not paying for it.
Right. Unlike distributed generation, which there is a known cost shift, we really wanted to make sure that the U of A was doing this in a sustainable way to the community economically. So that was a huge part of how we structured things. So it looks basically cost neutral from our perspective and theirs, but it does lock in because it is a known resource.
So my next question, I know you didn't see coming because I remember this. It's like, I have to find this out. So I remember about 9 or 10 years ago, and you talk about a rookie. You know, I go from social services to climate change, social. I mean, it's like, what are you doing, Gina? Learning a whole new world. And Jim Gentile, who was a very well-known scientist, his research was early research on GMOs. He was head of the Research Corporation. Someone introduced him to me, and they had a huge meeting at Biosphere 2. And I had to sign an agreement. Like, I had to, you know, basically I say, I'm from Jersey, and I say I had to, like, swear to God that I was going to not discuss what happened. And I went to 12 years of Catholic school, and if I swear, I don't talk about it. I was, like, terrified that people might look at me and say, did you go to that? And I'm like, am I allowed to say that? So what I want to know, people did not know in the community. There were a lot of people involved in the planning of this.
Yes.
And when the announcement came out, it was like, bam, and it was exciting, and it spread like the old definition of the word Twitter went through the crowd. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have to like swear on your life that you wouldn't talk about it outside of the U of A and DEP? How did you keep it a secret?
So I wouldn't quite go on swear on our life, but certainly because we're both overseen by regulatory bodies, the Board of Regents for the U of A and the Arizona Corporation Commission for us, we did not want to make any splashes that would inhibit or prejudge that we were going to have our contracts approved, the partnership effectively approved.
Oh, impressive.
So we did, you know, we did our, as much as we could, we kept it under wraps for as long as we could and then made the appropriate inroads to those regulatory bodies. And obviously it was very positive. The Board of Regents approved the contract or the parts and pieces that they needed to a month or two before the Corporation Commission. And then the commission, our commission, approved in December of 2018.
And because so many people there at TEP know me and know my personality and I kid a lot and all this stuff, I couldn't get a word out of anybody. I couldn't get a word. And I'd say, like, I'm not going to tell anybody. And I really do keep a secret. I don't. And they're like, they would look at me like deer in the headlights. Good for you. I had no idea what the announcement was going to be. And Dave Hutchins is the person that told me there was going to be an announcement. And I had to wait for like 2.5 months or something. It was torture, but well worth the wait. So with that in mind, without doing any great reveals, is there anything like so obvious that I missed? Because like I said to you, people have asked me, how did it come about? Who was involved? And there's big numbers. There's big savings. There's big energy savings for our community and clean air, and the beat goes on. Is there anything else that I missed that you think we should have talked about, or what's next that you can't tell me about?
I don't think there's anything that we specifically missed. I think the biggest piece was that we had an awesome working group from our side, from TEP side, and then our counterparts at the U of A. There was obviously both very large entities, a lot of things to work through and make sure that all our I's were dotted and T's were crossed from the legal side. So just a huge shout out that we got something done. It took a little longer than we were anticipating, but pretty much door to door, it was about a year. So it certainly also gave us a blueprint for these large special projects in the future. Whether or not we do this, you know, every 3 or 4 years, I can't say. But it did give us a blueprint, and gave other utilities in the state a blueprint to kind of get something like this done as well.
And, you know, I'm glad we trumped the news for some other universities. I can bring that up. I'm a Wildcat. I'm an alum, so I am
as well.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we did that too, not to mention. I think that for me, and if you don't have any last words, you can tell that I spent a lot of time reflecting on this and thinking about the impact, thinking about all that I know that's going on in the planet. I'm reading a book called This is the Way the World Ends by a scientist that I very much respect named Jeff Nesbitt. It's an incredible book, and it's not all bad news. It's like our world is ending as we know it, a la Australia. Their world will never be the same, not in our lifetimes. And when I look at good things happening, bad things happening, things accelerating, tragedies and triumphs, this is one that I can turn to that says to me, there's hope, there's possibility, change is not coming, changes are being implemented. There are people like Chris Kopeck that I'm sure if we caught him on YouTube, hidden camera, he was doing the happy dance when all of this happened. Now, isn't that visual?
He was very excited that
really,
we were able to
Chris
get it across the finish line.
Let's get a visual for Chris Kopeck doing the happy dance. But I'm obsessed with reading this book because I care about us as a civilization, as do hundreds of millions of other people. And I get to have a voice on the airwaves, which matters. So my hats off to all of the participants for taking this big leap, for making it happen. I'm proud to have TEP as a partner. I'm proud to have the university as a partner for all the good and all the bad and all that we argue about. But it's a wonderful community.
It is. That's
and
great.
Thanks for being here and for all you do. And in case somebody just like clicked on their iPad, it's Ted Burhans, the Director of Emerging Technology and Innovations, which just Google it. It's a really big job. And I thank you for taking the time,
absolutely,
given
thank
all
you.
That, to drive here, sit time and spend with me, time in the studio. And we're going to ask that you come back maybe in 6 months to see how's it going, what challenges there might be, because people in this community really care and people listen from all around the country. And of course, I always end with thanking our listeners. And my tagline is, without you, there would be no us. So
absolutely,
thanks for being a part of our world. And it's all hands on deck for 2020, people, like never before.
Absolutely.
Ted, thanks for all your
thank
good
you.
Work.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.